Do you know each other? This is Charles. This is Jess. This is Asherina. And this is Brenda. I mean, you forget everybody's name already. You've met everybody here. Okay. So, first of all, you might not know. Okay, you two are a pair.
Yep.
And you two are a pair. That's for when we finish. It's good to go around and find three or more paintings, one from each period, because we're looking at the Enlightenment, we're looking at Romanticism, and we're looking at Victorianism. We're even dipping our nose into Modernism. When you finish here, if you wanted to spend a bit more time in Victorianism, you go across the domain and get to the State Library, the big old steps that go up the State Library facing the Botanic Gardens. If you go in the entrance to the State Library, on the wall on the left-hand side is a fantastic carving from Thomas Carlyle about literature and about the importance of reading. It's fantastic. I wish every student to see it. I took my Shakespeare students there the other day because we had an event in the State Library. That's one thing. The other thing is that opposite the State Library, the Botanic Gardens, is where they had that huge Crystal Palace that burnt down. I told you about the big palace that was built there in the 1880s, that sort of represented something of Victorian, Victorian, not megalomania, but something in that direction.
The Gothic revival.
Their belief that they could kind of conquer the universe with their architecture. And the gates for that are still there in Macquarie Street, the Palace Garden gates. Still there, you can see it. So if I have time, I'll take you over there. I might even walk back there after to see what we're doing. Okay, what we're doing today, we're going to look at the 18th century room, which has got, you know, things from 1700 through to 1800. So it's mainly Enlightenment. Enlightenment means all those artists that came before the Romantics. And the Romantics wanted to get rid of that. They wanted something new and fresh. That's why the French Revolution came. That's why the Romantic poets, Blake and Wordsworth, they wanted freedom. Now, in that 18th century room, there's Enlightenment, but there's also Romanticism, the beginnings of Romanticism. There's quite a few paintings there from the 1780s on. Now, one of the beauties of coming to this gallery for our course is that Romanticism had a heyday in Australia. Because when was the first Australian art, European-based Australian art, produced? When was it? Have a guess. Come on.
1800s?
Yes, of course. Early
1800s. Yeah.
Because Cook came here in the 1780s, 1790s. And so the earliest art was done in the Romantic period. So if you were doing a PhD on Romanticism and you were a student in England or America, you would love to come to Australia to see Romantic art full-blown in its depiction of a country that had not been savaged by the Industrial Revolution. So we're going to step back and have a look at some Romantic Australian art. Then we're going to go into Victorianism, a big room, two rooms full of Victorianism. And the Victorians were trying to sort out the problems in England. And how did they sort it out? They sorted it out by either imagining other worlds back in the past, or imagining other worlds here in the now, like Charles Dickens did. How did he imagine other worlds in the here and now? What did he do? What did Charles Dickens do in Hard Times? How did he attempt to solve the problems of the condition of England? By writing what?
Satire
about what?
The events that were taking place.
What events were taking place? Well, that's one thing. That's one thing. But what did he do to try and change that?
Try to point it out. What was wrong with it, I guess?
Yes. And how did he try and point it out?
Maybe like sarcasm, or he made like a fictitious idiom.
Well, he brought something else into it. What else did he bring into that world to try and transform it or to suggest alternative values?
In terms of techniques?
No, in terms of events and people and places and things happening.
Mr. Cleary.
Yeah, you've got it. What does Mr. Cleary represent? What does Mr. Cleary represent? What does he represent?
Fancy and imagination.
Yeah, why? Why? What, is, what does he have?
Well, he has a lisp to start off
with. He has more than a lisp.
Yeah.
What's he part of?
Circus.
Circus!
Yeah.
He's part of a circus!
Yeah, it represents...
I just had a really quick question. Just looking through the painting by Eugene von
Gerard.
And you know how he has little characters in the painting?
Tiny little figures.
I noticed that in the three of his landscape paintings, they have the same characters in them.
Yep.
Is that like an intentional thing, or does he just use the same like characters?
It's himself.
Himself. But there's like other little characters that are the same as well.
They're his brothers and sisters.
Sisters?
Oh.
You don't know. Oh.
Maybe they're dressed like men. I don't know.
Does it matter?
It kind of does bother me. I don't know.
It's cool because we didn't think there would be like the same people.
Yeah, like you're just looking at it, it's like the same people. It's like they're everywhere.
Have I answered your question? No. Not really.
You did your best.
I did my best.
You did your best.
Oh, by the way, thanks for your comments on my blog. It's still really
good. Look at that. It's a beauty.
It's a beaut view, yeah. It's fantastic. Okay, so we're going to go now to the 18th century. Put on your time machine. Now, you may well ask me, of all the paintings in this gallery, why do I bring you to this bloody stupid piece of work? What is it about this piece of work that's worth talking about? Yes, this one. It's called A Young Lady Holding a Pug Dog in the mid-1740s. I'll tell you why I show it to you. I love pug dogs. I want a pug dog.
Is it about indulgence? The indulgence of
Charles, you're very much on the ball. Did you just hear Charles?
Say that again.
Said it's probably about like the indulgence of the aristocracy before like the French Revolution.
Right? He's perfect. He's on the ball, this man. Minties. God, I haven't got enough of them.
Do you actually have minties?
No. Pretend minties. Okay. That's perfect. It's about the indulgence before the French Revolution. Look behind me. You see something else on this wall there? Is that about indulgence in the French Revolution here, Brenda?
Sorry. Behind you. Is that Mary?
It looks like it. Could well be. Why would people want to cut her head off? Savages that they are. Why would they?
Who is that, Queen Elizabeth?
No, it's not. It's just a woman in a blue dress. Why would they? Charles asked the question, is it Marie Antoinette? And my answer was, well, it could be.
Yeah.
So what is it about her, about this, that makes this an Enlightenment portrait?
Very proper.
She's the
proper, but come back to what Charles said. What did you say? The aristocracy indulge themselves in their own wealth, their own materiality, and you know the staginess of their faces is something almost.
Yeah.
If I went and gave a lecture like this, I used to have a lecturer at Sydney University used to walk in like this.
Where's that pride to?
Pride. Look over here, another one.
That's a good one.
It's a good one, but look at it's on the top of page 2 on your handout. Have you got a pencil?
Yeah.
Okay. So are you two a pair?
Yeah.
Okay. So Joshua Rand, you have to watch this guy, Brenda. Mm-hmm. You've got to keep him focused. He drifts off. He drifts off. You have to stand on his toes occasionally. So Joshua Reynolds, he was the artist who was most hated by Blake, who said Reynolds is the death of art. Why would he say that? Why would Blake say Reynolds is the death of art? Somebody who can produce material that looks like silk and shoes that look like something, you know, you... Ah!
Did he do a lot of self-portraits? Is that a self-portrait?
That's not a self-portrait, but it's a portrait of James the 7th, Earl of Leicester. So why would Blake say Reynolds is the death of art?
So I guess like Blake would celebrate life and nature and...
Yeah.
You know, and that's, there's nothing alive about that.
Exactly. Do you hear that, Jess?
Yeah.
So Blake was a romantic, and Wordsworth too would celebrate nature, life, the creation.
That's the exact opposite of what you're doing.
Exact opposite.
The clouds are...
Blake also more anti-authority in general?
Blake was also anti-authority. This guy's picking it up a lot. You see, Blake, you know, Blake attacked authority, authority in politics, authority in the church. He wanted to get back to the grassroots. You know, Blake was somebody who wanted to reinvent Christianity back to Christ and get rid of the hierarchy and the superstructure. That was Blake, very much so. So this room, if you look around, has got a lot of Enlightenment images in it. But, follow me over this way. Now look at this amazing painting here. This was done in 1824. Now what happened? What was 1824 as an artistic period? When was it?
Was that expressionist?
Not expressionist. Try again. Not impressionist. Try again.
Romantic?
Romantic. Yes, you're on the board. You get a bag of minties as well. So when were the romantics around? 1780 to 1830.
It's only 50 years.
50 years. So he's right in the middle of romanticism. So what's romantic about this painting? It's beautiful, but that you could say that's beautiful too. So what sort of difference in beauty? What's
nature?
Nature is one thing.
The attention to detail with the hills and the pastoral land. There's the really sort of, can't really describe it, but really you can see the lighting.
Yeah, yep.
If you get what I mean.
Reflection.
Looks like heaps of freedom. That's not very dark.
Okay, that's really good. Heaps of freedom. A real sense of light and shape, a sense that you could kind of be in that world and be nurtured by the presence of God even in the created universe. And look at how human beings, the house there and the house, they're shrunk to tiny little representations. So
is that in Australia?
No, that's in, that, I'm glad you asked that question.
Tasmania?
No. That is in the Lake District. Ullswater is in the Lake District.
Is that in America?
No. Where's the Lake District?
In Canada?
No.
New Zealand.
Asherina, where's the Lake District? Oh, come on. I'm going to give up teaching tomorrow.
There's a Lake District in America.
Oh, God. No.
England.
Jess, you've won us another bag of bridges. So what about the Lake District in England? What's famous about it? Come on, Asherina. What's famous about the Lake District in England? Brandon, help her quick.
What's famous about
Lake England?
Come on.
Is this it?
Maybe it's one of the last holdouts of the pre-industrial
period. Who lived in the Lake District in England?
Oh.
Come on.
So guess Blake?
Is that hang your head in shame?
Who lived in the Lake District?
Who lived in the Lake District in England?
No clue.
Jane Austen. John Glover.
Well, he did, yeah. He knew some of the other people who lived there. Tables turned, expostulation and reply. William Wordsworth's house is just over there. Serious. Serious.
That's beautiful.
It is.
Is that what it looks like in real life?
That's what it looks like in real life.
Still.
Wow. Except if you go there in summertime, you've got thousands of
There's a boat on the...
Yep, tiny little boat there as well. This is very romantic era, this sense of shrinking human beings down in the face of the magnificent cosmic force of nature.
I bet you still paint like this, I believe.
it's even different.
Yeah. I like how like the clouds are heavy.
Okay, let's have a look at another romantic painting in this room. "1781, an extensive landscape near Paris." What's important about 1781?
Beginning
of romanticism. Gee, this chap is getting so quick. He's going to be a genius by the time we get out of this gallery. So what are the romantic elements in this painting?
Still got the wide open spaces.
Yep. What else? Asherina, what about the human beings in this painting?
Are they painting?
They look as if they're painting, that's right. That's one thing. So
they're
you've
not
got,
reading their books.
They're not reading their books, that's good. Very good. What else? What other human beings are there? Brendan, come on, you've got to be drawn into this conversation. Other human beings, what are they?
Sorry, what are the human beings?
Yes. Are they royalty standing there with their necks ready to be cut with an axe?
No, civilians.
What sort of civilians?
Farmers,
peasants, ordinary people. Yep, but you're missing out these ones here.
Yeah, no, I saw them.
Saw them.
Yeah. I like how they're at a peak as well, like looking out.
Yeah. That's cool. Okay, so 1780. So you get within this room here, you've got Enlightenment and Romanticism. Before we leave this room and go to the Australian, let's come across here. I want to show you this one. This is pretty impressive. Now, this is 1790. This is in the middle of page 3 on your sheets. Yes, middle of page 3. By John Hoppner, Mademoiselle Hillingsburg, 1791. So, 11 years after the beginning of Romanticism. Compare this to those Enlightenment women, the ladies in blue and the lady with the pug dog on her lap. Compare this painting with those Enlightenment. What's the difference?
She's much younger for a start. She's also more, jubilant.
Good, she's more jubilant.
She's still got, a sense of grace. As you can see,
she's got a sense of grace. None of those
in the posture and everything.
Yep.
The way her sort of being a position.
Good. So, Charles, no more talking at the moment. You've had these four people here. It's lovely what you're saying. It's fantastic, but we don't want to use up all the juice. So, Jess, add something.
What do you think Charles is calling? She's not happier, freer.
Happier and freer. There you've got it.
You said there's still that bit of hopelessness.
It's a good thing. She's a dancer.
She was a dancer, yeah.
There's that grace there in her stance.
That's right, grace in her stance, I like that. What about her face?
She's smiling.
Come on, Asherina, tell us about her face. Jess just gave you a clue.
Well, she's...
Were you listening to Jess?
Yeah.
Yeah, what did he say?
She's smiling.
She's smiling. Is she saying I'm above you? Well, she is about 2 meters above you at the moment. But is that what her face is actually saying, I'm above you? Is it? I don't know. Charles thinks not. Charles?
It's just subjective.
We can have an argument about this. I can see an argument brewing.
Colours
are happier. Absolutely.
And arguing over her facial expression.
Yeah, that's right.
I feel like her face is like a focal point as well. Her face is a lot clearer than the rest of the painting.
It is. There's a sense of freedom in the way she's holding her hand and material and so on. Yeah, excellent. Okay, guys, let's go to Romanticism in Australia back in the early period. Let's head right back to the 1800s. So we've just seen this one. Jess, we've just seen this one, and this is by John Glover, who lived in the Lake District in England, right? Yeah. But guess what? He migrated to Australia, to Tasmania, and he started painting landscapes in Australia. Look at what he did there. Come and have a listen. that there. He did that. He came to Tasmania and he continued painting, and he brought his romantic view of the world and looked at the Australian landscape. So how does this Australian landscape draw on romantic energies and themes?
One thing that popped out at me straight away,
yep.
You see this tree here?
Yep.
Look at the way everything's like, it's like extra curvy. I don't know. Is that right?
That's right. That's the way he's painted it.
Extra curvy. It's not even, it looks realistic, but it's too curvy.
That's right. So that's an interesting observation, how early colonial artists, they hadn't figured out exactly how to paint the gum trees. That's true. It's a very good observation. But does romanticism come into his depiction of the landscape? So how, Jess? What sort of feelings and thoughts and ideas? Go on, Charles, say.
It sort of feels like a sanctuary away from European...
Fantastic! A sanctuary away from... How would you pay that big money, that big dollars for that comment? A sanctuary away from European... That was brilliant!
That was awesome.
A sanctuary. Now, tell me something about the people in that painting. Huh? People? Where are people?
Is that a little baby?
There's a girl
and there's also somebody sitting next to her if you look more closely. I forgot to tell you to bring your binoculars with you. There, see? There's two figures. There's the artist with his paint palette and his wife sitting next to him. And guess what? There's their little dog running in front of them. Dog? Huh? Where's
it? I see the dog. Actually, on the top right, there's like a town in the background as well.
Amazing that you see that. And can you see the bird in the front here?
Yeah.
And the wild flowers.
It's a little... One of those ones, but not the normal one. It's the red one with the wings.
Yeah. Fantastic. So what are these people doing in the landscape? How's the landscape kind of catering to their needs? Or how are they adjusting themselves to the force of the landscape?
They're just sitting down in awe
of the... Oh, look at this. This has got truth spilling out of him, this young man. Sitting there in awe of the landscape. Couldn't have said it better myself.
Even just looking at it makes you want to go and sit in the...
Exactly, that's right.
It's like, there's one big, thick tree in the middle.
Yep.
And then everything else, even though it's like surrounding them, it's like thin.
Yep. So it's sort of,
it's not menacing.
Not menacing at all. It's inviting, isn't it, as Jess said. Okay, now this guy also produced this painting.
That's so cool.
Now, you remember me telling you about the Romantics and their view about native peoples. And remember, I don't know if you remember me saying...
What did you say about that
they're superior?
French philosopher Jean-Jacques Rousseau, he coined the word noble savages. Noble. Not primitive barbarians, but noble savages. And he argued that primitive peoples, in some way, had more humanity than people who lived in civilization who wanted to do nothing but drop bombs on Syria, for example. So what's this artist telling us about these so-called primitive natives living in the landscape?
So free.
They're free, beautiful.
And he's telling us that their nobility comes from the nature and the outside world.
Beautiful, Asherina, that's fantastic. And their nobility comes from nature. Now, there's a... Go on, Jess.
Spaghetti trees.
Again, the spaghetti trees. That's right. Nice word.
Especially bottom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like right in the foreground.
Yeah, yeah. That's it. But there's something sad to say about this painting. It was done in 1838, when the historians tell us that most of the Aboriginals were already wiped out of Tasmania by so-called civilized people. By the civilized.
Why are you looking at me like that?
I'm not looking at you like that. I'm just marveling at your response. So in this room, there are lots of paintings that capture this quality of nature, this romantic quality. Have a look over here. Look. This one is second one down from page 4. John Skinner Pratt.
Which one, sorry?
This one.
And look, those
wallabies and hunter and gum trees and gullies. It's got everything in it.
Beautiful.
And you know where that's a picture of? You're not going to believe this when I tell you.
Don't tell me in New South Wales.
It's in Crow's Nest.
No way.
No.
Yeah, absolutely.
Still
absolutely.
Today.
Not still today. Oh. You know Crow's Nest know. Today.
National Park.
That's Crow's Nest.
When did it get demolished?
Oh, God, when? 1850s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s? I don't know when. Here, another one. Look, this is Thomas Clark.
Awesome.
Fern Gully with an Aboriginal family. So again, paintings that are capturing primitive peoples in a natural environment, embraced by nature.
Wow.
Now look at this one here. This is one of the best here. This is Eugene von Gerard, and he's an Australian artist, and this is a picture of New Zealand. But what is it about nature that's being presented here? Very romantic painting, actually painted past the romantic period in the 1870s already.
The majesty of the mountains,
I like it. It's even got alliteration in it.
Proverbial,
that's fantastic. Yeah. The majesty of the mountains. You should take over my job, Charlie. The majesty of the mountains. And look at the human beings, how they're dwarfed into insignificance. And here, and here, and here. Amazing, isn't it? Tiny little creatures dwarfed into nothing in the context of this vast God's creation. This is a very, it's a very spiritual painting, really. And it's about nature, but a sense of awe and majesty and magnificence in, as you would experience when you go there. I've never been there. I want to go there. I want to go to Milford Sound. Anybody been to Milford Sound? No. No. Yeah. So there it is. That's just a fantastic romantic painting. Now, Eugene von Gerard, two other paintings by him over here. These are on page 5. This one and this one. This is the forest around Wollongong, south of Sydney.
Oh, yes.
And this is Strath Creek.
That's definitely still there today.
It's still there today. Parts of the forest are still there today. Can you spot the human beings on these paintings? Two there and one there. Look. Again, dwarfed by nature almost into insignificance.
It's going to be so overwhelming for the artist.
Overwhelming, that's right.
That's
right, exactly, exactly. So that's why Australia was a romantic paradise. It was like nature that had been unharnessed, unchanged, untouched, exactly.
From memory, this was painted in his studio as well.
Yeah.
Remember a question I wanted to ask you, 1780 to 1810 was romantic.
That's right.
What was after that?
Ooh, what was after that?
Do lots?
We're going to come to it shortly.
All right.
Rooms and rooms full of it.
Awesome.
And I'm going to ask you the question then.
Yeah, sounds good.
And you're going to, and probably Charles is going to answer it. But we'll see. Maybe Brendan will answer it. Okay,
Charles,
so this...
Charles, your jacket looks bulletproof.
Oh, it is, mate. Just okay.
Is it a Dreiser blue?
Hey?
Dreiser blue?
I don't know the brand. It's not. It's my brother's, mate. Right. Check it out later, buddy.
Okay. So this is romanticism in Australia. You can see what a wonderful resource it is. Now we're going to go to the Victorian era. Now the Victorian era began with what, Brendan?
The reign of Queen Victoria?
The reign of Queen Victoria. Bag of Minties for Brendan. But two bags of Minties for the person who can tell me what date Queen Victoria came to the throne.
1834?
Very, very warm, but not really on the ball yet.
1837.
Yes! 1837!
I'm going off him. He deserves
it. No, I think he needs to learn off you now. Because you got the date. Bang! You got it right. Come on, let's go and have a look at 1837. On this side so people can get through. So what one thing about the Victorian era, if you've ever looked at pictures of Victorian living rooms, they're crowded with things, as this room is. It's got that real feel of Victorianism about it. And this hall was one of the first rooms that this gallery started, because it started in Victorian times, not in Romantic times. Something like that. And what we're going to see in here is the way the Victorians were trying to make sense of the condition of England by either imagining worlds in the past or looking with intensity at the present or trying to imagine all sorts of different futures. That's what we're going to look at now. So the first one we're going to come around is around here, which is on the top of page 6. It's called the Golden Age. And the title of this painting, The Golden Age, done in 1840, look, 3 years after what? Queen Victoria. 3 years after Queen Victoria. William Etty, The Golden Age. Does anybody know what the Golden Age is? Does that ring a bell for anybody, what the Golden Age was?
All I know is Golden. All I've never heard of is Golden Age of Islam, but I know it's not really.
Well, it's related. It's like the earliest period before civilization, when human beings lived in complete harmony with nature. Garden of Eden sort of thing. So this is actually, it says here, inspired by the ancient Greek poem Theogony, dealing with the Golden Age. And the question I've got here, what does this painting suggest about how life was lived before the Industrial Revolution? So, you know, it's taking us back into a prehistoric time. That's what the Victorians often did.
I thought it might have been like an orgy or something.
It's a bit like that.
As well, for something
well, it is.
The Golden Age always has that sort of thing.
It does. And particularly in Victorian times.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the Victorian age was, despite the fact that it's seen as an age of prudery, was also very under the cover, underground sexuality. It was there, very much so.
Sexual perversion.
It was that. Yeah, that's right. So it's got that kind of quality to it, and I'm sure that the Victorian critics would have slammed this painting when it came out as being too explicit, too out there. Okay, we're going to go to my favourite painting in the gallery now, this one here. We're going there later, this one first. Just feast your eyes on this one. Asherita, come back here. Now this is in the middle of page 6, and it's called Chaucer at the Court of Edward III. And it was made in 1847 by Ford Madox Brown. And Ford Madox Brown was one of a number of artists who called themselves the Pre-Raphaelites.
Raphaelites.
R-A-E-P-H-I-L-I-T-E, Pre-Raphaelites. And this is a Pre-Raphaelite painting. This is a Pre-Raphaelite painting. Ones with a lot of colour in them. And what does Pre-Raphaelite mean? It meant they wanted to create a world that was before Raphael, who was a famous Italian Renaissance artist. They wanted to go back into times before then, into medieval history. So this painting is Chaucer at the Court of Edward III. Now, who is Chaucer? Come on, you're an English literature major, you should know who Chaucer is. Come on, go and have a read, tell me over there. Read that and tell me who Chaucer is. Impress it on your brain, Jess. Come back and tell the rest of the group when you've sorted it all out. So who's the father of English literature?
Chaucer.
What did he write?
Canterbury Tales.
Canterbury Tales. Never forget it. You're an English literature major. You've got to remember that Chaucer was the father of English literature and he wrote the Canterbury Tales. Never forget it. And go and read the Canterbury Tales. Or at least look at it, some of it, yeah. In modern translation, it's fantastic. It's all about people. All varieties of people. Farmers, priests, nuns, millers, full of all sorts of people. Now, what is this? What is Ford Madox Brown telling us here in this painting? What's he showing us? What's his interest? What is he wanting to present to the Victorian audience who come in here and don't have cinema or don't have television? What does he want to show us?
It honestly shows to me like there's a big sense of unity.
A big sense of community?
I said unity.
You said unity?
Yeah.
Unity, community, yeah.
I wouldn't say the Victorians didn't have that.
Yep.
Like, I don't really know how to contrast this with the Victorian age. I guess in the sense that there isn't really a big sense of decorum. Like, they are more sort of emotive and free-flowing in a way.
Yep.
Other than that, I don't know, like, that's a religious theoretic guidelines, is it?
Well, no, it's not really. He's reading from his poems. He's reading from the Canterbury Tales, and he's reading to the King Edward III. So it's a kind of a public occasion where the poet is reading his poems, and you've got an audience sitting around here who are more or less interested in what's happening.
They used to look like they had hippies or something.
They do.
What's that guy in red on the far right with a weird hand?
Yeah, that's right. I think he's the pardoner. The pardoner is someone who goes selling pardons, and you know, you pay
for
the church, buy yourself out of hell. He was one of the characters in Chaucer's Canterbury Tales. The pardoner was.
Was England Anglican at this time?
No, it was Catholic back then, before the Reformation, before the... Yeah.
Isn't this 1800s?
No, this is 1300s. 1300s?
Oh, but it was painted in the 1800s.
It's painted in 1800s. Oh. The important message is sinking in. The Victorians wanted to paint back in the medieval times. They wanted to paint the world as it was before the Industrial Revolution. Okay. They wanted to paint the world when emotions and feelings were flowing freely and more simply, and when life was... Now, what does the colour and the movement of this painting express? When life was what, Brendan?
When life was...
Finish the sentence. Give me a few ideas. And then, Asherina, you give me a few ideas as well.
Life was a lot tougher. Yes.
Could it be tougher than working in the factories in the Industrial Revolution in England? Asherina? When life was what? Privilege.
Better.
I think better is a nicer word.
Well, I don't know something about it. I just don't think it's enjoyable.
It's almost like a social gathering where people are chatting.
It is.
People aren't paying attention.
It is. It's a picture of life.
Bored.
Yeah, some are bored, some are listening, others are rapt, others are carrying their own conversations. But whatever it does, it transports you into a world far away from the Industrial Revolution. Mm-hmm. Correct?
Yeah, true. It's very medieval. Very, very medieval.
Very medieval. Now we're going to look at two other paintings here. Look. Okay. In contrast to worlds removed from the Industrial Revolution, look at this one here. This is on the middle of page 8. Sir Luke Fildes, the widower. What sort of world is the widower depicting up here?
Humble, poor.
Humble and poor. And what's happening, do you think?
Right in the... Maybe it looks like he's passed away, maybe.
Looks like maybe one of this man's five children has passed away.
Yeah.
And where's his wife?
Maybe she's passed away.
Maybe she's passed away as well. So it's telling a story about what it was like to live in industrial or poverty-stricken England in the late 1800s in the 19th century. And guess what? This artist was used by Charles Dickens to illustrate his books, Luke Fildes. So there's a direct literary connection here. And did Dickens in Hard Times represent the hardships of life like this?
Yeah.
He did, absolutely. So there's in the 19th century. Pamela is here! Pamela! The world fell apart. Do you have a pencil?
I do, I have a pen.
You don't need a pen, you have to have a pencil.
What am I going to do with a pencil?
You're going to write with it.
Well,
you're going to write. You're going to have a better one.
Would you rather a bigger one?
Okay. It reminds me of my parents picking up pencils when I used to go over to university.
Look at that, you've got the best pencil of all. Yours is twice as long as anybody else's. That's because you're able to get a long pencil. Good. So, we're in the Victorian room, Pamela, and Charles here is going to tell you about what's significant in what we've seen so far on this wall, how the Victorians responded to the condition of England. And we've looked at three paintings. We've looked at the Golden Age down there, which is... the Golden Age is right down the bottom. It's the top of page 6. The Golden Age. And he's going to tell you about that painting first, the Golden Age.
Oh, this one right here.
Yep.
All right, so the Golden Age is supposed to represent the time before civilization started, where man was sort of, say, maybe free and decadent, I guess.
Before industrialization?
Definitely before industrialization.
Yep, yep.
But you could also interpret it as, in a way, like, I know I did, like, showing the prosperity of that time, in a way, because there was prosperity at that time as well. This painting.
And then we looked at this huge painting in the middle here by Ford Madox Brown, one of the pre-Raphaelite artists,
yeah,
who were trying to create work that had the quality that was existed before the Italian Renaissance, before Raphael. And yeah, go Charles, tell us some more about this.
Oh yes, set in 1300s in England.
And Jess is going to tell you who it's about.
His name is Chaucer.
With a CH.
So it's pre-1300s, right?
The painting is about pre-1300s, but it's painted in 1840s because the Victorians... Well, what did the Victorians do, Asherina? What were they doing when they were painting about the 1300s? Big loud voice, can't hear you. How were they relating to the problems of industrialization in England?
Going back in time.
Going back in time! Got that, Asherina? Lock it in, write it down. Jess has earned himself several bags of minties through correct answers.
So what did they do?
They went back in time. And it connects up with the Golden Age painting as well. They retreated from the present as a way of dealing with the problems of the immediate condition of England. Yeah.
So they just did a painting on golden era.
And then we came to look at this painting here called The Widower, which is just where you walked in. And Asherina's going to tell us about The Widower, why The Widower is so different from the paintings we've looked at in here so far. Excellent. So it's a painting about the realities of life near and now, the realities of working class life, which we've seen depicted in Dickens as well. And Dickens was actually used this artist, Luke Fildes, as his illustrator.
Funny how the younger kids up there, if you look at those three, they look happier.
Rosy cheeks.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. The older one, she's obviously scared.
That's perfect.
Actually,
yeah. Charles Dickens thing.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Now, directly in front of us here, do you see the painting with the redcoat soldiers? That is the painting called John Seymour Lucas, The Gordon Riots. You got that one, Charles? You got this painting here, The Gordon Riots?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, this painting was done in 1879, so it's a Victorian painting, but it's a painting that was done about events in the Romantic period back in 1780. The Gordon Riots happened in London, and guess what? William Blake was involved in the Gordon Riots.
No,
he was. He was involved in the Gordon Riots.
He was a bit of a rebel, wasn't he?
He was a rebel. He was rioting with the Gordon Riots. Now, what's happening?
What were they rioting against?
They were rioting against the tyranny of laws and systems that were blocking out the poor and that were privileging the rich.
Oh, Nothing's changed.
And in France, they had a revolution and they killed all the leaders. But in England, they didn't have a revolution. So what happened in England?
Well, England sort of gradually expanded their franchise.
They gradually did, but before they gradually did it, how did England cope with revolutionaries?
Kill them?
Oh, probably killed them.
And what's this painting about?
He's wearing red uniform, so is that like a law enforcement officer being shot?
Well, he's been shot, but what are the other law enforcement officers doing?
Are they
looking out for whoever could have done that?
Well, what are they actually doing right at this minute? You can see all that smoke in the middle of the painting. They're shooting the revolutionaries.
There's like people dead or on the ground.
Yeah. So the Gordon riots in England were suppressed by force. And it's a picture of how the English government were terrified of the extremism of the revolution spreading to England, and that's what happened. So, you know, Blake knew about that back in the 1780s, but in the Victorian era, they were still representing pictures of how to suppress revolution in England. Well, he might be a doctor, I'm not sure.
Funny how civilized they still were, like even if they're shooting people, like the front row shoots.
Yeah.
I'm guessing they'd move, reload, and the next one would come up.
That's right. Okay, I want you to do a 180 degree swivel.
That one?
To this one, this whole wall. But we can start with that one in the middle.
Since
you are very interested in that. And
I'm guessing it's Nebuchadnezzar, maybe?
No, it's not. It's the Queen of Sheba visiting King Solomon.
Right.
Yeah. And it is on page 10. Turn to page 10, Jeff.
And I've got Solomon, the wisest man to ever live.
I've got an image here, but the image I've got on your page is upside down. So if you want to see it, you have to turn it the right way up. That's why it is. So I'm going to read you the text from the Book of Kings, which describes this event. And when the Queen of Sheba heard of the fame of Solomon concerning the name of the Lord, she came to prove him with hard questions. And she came to Jerusalem with a very great train, with camels that bear spices and very much gold and precious stones. And when she was come to Solomon, she communed with him all that was in her heart. And Solomon told her all her questions. There was not anything hid from the king which he told her not. And when the Queen of Sheba had seen all Solomon's wisdom and the house that he had built, and the meat of his table, and the sitting of his servants, and the attendance of his ministers, and their apparel, and his cupbearers, and his ascent by which he went up to the house of the Lord, there was no more spirit in her. And she said to the king, "It was a true report that I heard in mine own land of thy acts and of thy wisdom." And there's more, but that's just a quote at the start of the story. So, question to ask, this is by one of the famous Victorian artists who loved to, as many Victorian artists do, love to create massive pictures that could draw people into the narrative of whether it was a biblical subject or whether it was a mythological subject. What is this saying about the role of women in the Victorian age? Does it show anything about the Victorian approach or attitude towards women of the time? Or is there anything else you want to say about this painting?
Well, it's got the women there, right? And
yep.
They look like they're serving and they're attending to the needs.
Yep.
So they saw women as like enchantresses for that purpose.
Yep.
The
yep.
lure, the in, the art, use them as an art form.
Okay, so that's a very good observation. So women are used like lures, like enchantresses, like art form drawing people in. Yes, Asherina.
But you can see there's women sitting up there on the right hand.
Yep, yep.
That's showing you exactly the opposite of that.
Yep, yep. So how is it showing the opposite, Asherina?
It shows you that they have the power just as men do.
Okay, very interesting. Yeah, good. So it's a real... It's a real, real balancing act there, yeah. And what about Queen of Sheba herself?
She needs a bra.
She needs a bra, she does. I don't think they had bras back in those times, did they? Yeah. But she needs some kind of protection.
Actually, well, Solomon had like 600 or 700 concubines, sex slaves.
Is that
so maybe
right?
That's what those women were, yeah.
Okay, oh, right,
he had
right.
lots of sex slaves, yeah. He had many wives.
You're right, right.
No, but you're
so
right.
So they get to look good in the picture, but yeah, that's yeah, their
yeah.
role.
That's their role, yeah. So, the frame. What about the frame?
You mean the actual frame?
I mean the actual frame, yeah. How is that part of the artistic expression? Because the frame was actually built with the picture, the artist.
Like that's just the architecture.
That's right.
It looks like pillars.
It does. It's wonderful.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, actually.
And you know, this was produced before Hollywood, before television. And this is what they did back then. They came in here and they sat here with their picnic baskets and enjoyed all the narrative stories that were going on there. They'd say, what's this person doing? What's happening over here? What are these peacocks doing? What are they eating over here? And there's somebody playing the harp in the middle there. Harps in the middle. Amazing.
Unreal.
So is it biblical and mythological?
Biblical and mythological. That's correct. That's correct.
What's mythological about it?
Mythological is like Golden Age, like Hyperion.
Oh, yeah.
This is biblical.
Solomon, he had it all.
He
sex,
did, he did.
Money, he did. Power, you know what he said? Vanity of vanities.
And you know what? He had a beard just like you.
Yeah.
He did. He really did.
When you read in Ecclesiastes, he goes, vanity of vanity.
That's right.
All vanity.
All vanity. So come down here. Charles, Asherina, down this way. Pamela. So I want to show you two paintings here, this one and this one. At, you know, in our literature in the 19th century, there was a lot of interest in the role of women in society. And, you know, we've got John Stuart Mill writing his book, The Subjection of Women, which is in our anthology. In Hard Times, we've got women in there. We've got Louisa, who's totally suppressed by her father. And we've got Sissy Jupe, who she comes from the circus, but she's got independence and she's got power to change the world in which she lives. So this whole wall has got lots of different representations of women. Now, this one here is called a Dorcas meeting. Now, the Dorcas meeting is from biblical times. And it's a painting of women whose duty it was to look after the poor. So this painting is a representation of women in the role of supporters, of helping people and the support for society. The Dorcas meeting. Next to it, you've got this painting of Helen of Troy. Who was Helen of Troy? Helen of Troy, this is from Greek mythological times. She was the cause of the great wars in Troy, and it was people vying for her love that created the war. And there's the war happening in the background, and she's standing there holding her bright red sensual coat, and she's looking out, and what speech bubbles would you put in her mouth?
Gasp.
Oh, shit. Did I do all this? Am I responsible for all this?
Her hands are so realistic. That right hand is unbelievable.
It's amazing. It is amazing. So there you've got opposite representations of women as, you know, moral custodians and women who are the cause of chaos in the world. And here, the very Victorian painting here, look, this is called The Sea Hath Its Pearls. I mean, this is so Victorian in its texture and flavour. This was painted in 1897. It's on your sheets here also. The Sea Hath Its Pearls. It's like a obviously a painting with a kind of a moral motif. But it's also kind of very sentimental, really. Victorian sentimentality. What do I mean by that? I mean it's... Sorry?
Feeling.
Well, sentimentality means feeling, but sentimentality also means sort of unreal feeling. It means feeling that's kind of cooked up or not deeply authentic. I don't know if you agree with me on that, but this is a sentimental painting in the sense of...
Are you trying to say she thinks she's connected with nature because she's on a beach?
Something like that.
Oh, okay.
Something like that.
She's got shoes on.
Yeah. Okay, come up this way. Come up this way. So this one here, this is the middle of page 9, Frederick Lord Leighton. And this is a very typical Victorian painting about moral conscience and about sexuality. And it's sort of like, it's a really mixed painting, the way I read it. Maybe someone else would read it differently. But the story is, it's called Simon with a C and Iphigenia. And if you read the notes over there, it tells you that Simon, this man on the right-hand side, he'd been a rather bad lad as an adolescent in the early 20s.
Looks like an inner-eighth.
Well, he had been. He had been really... the word Simon apparently means brute.
Seriously?
He'd been a brute. And... but that's a different spelling. And... but he's come into the forest one day and he's seen this gorgeous woman lying there and he suddenly... his conscience is awoken and he realizes he's not going to be a bad man anymore. He's going to be enlightened. And the enlightenment, of course, is sun rising over the sea. So that's the story, that there's a process of enlightenment taking place here because he's seen this amazing woman lying there. But one of the group, the last group I had here, said, yeah, but doesn't she look very sensual lying there? Doesn't
it
sort of...
he's looking at her.
And Jess,
I think it's in London. It looks more like lust.
So that's really interesting. So you've got this kind of mixed messages seemingly coming out from what the artist said he was producing and what the Victorian age, in a sense, got him to produce.
It looks like he's thinking, what should I do? Should I just...
That's right.
Like you can see, he's like situated
there. That's right. That's it. Yeah, so there is a kind of a very complex Victorian moral painting, in what extent.
Same frame shop.
Nicely spotted. Yeah.
She looks very, I suppose when you have paintings like that, women like that, they are a little bit angelic. And that's what drew someone to them. And they looked at that and thought, I'm going to be good and right from now.
That's right, exactly. Well, that's what the artist says he was trying to do. But we, with our kind of 21st century perspective, we kind of a bit critical of that. And we think, as Jess thought, that it's more a painting about seduction rather than kind of moral transformation.
Yeah, you could see that from today's perspective.
Yeah. Now, on your far left here, this is also a Victorian painting, but it's a painting about Greek times. It's the philosopher Diogenes, and Jess will appreciate this. The philosopher Diogenes, he wanted to live his life as simple as possible, and he decided to live in a barrel with only a cup and a spoon. That was his way of solving the problems of life on earth, is to live in a barrel, full stop. No washing up, exactly. And look at that beard. Jess, you're going to have to work hard to get a beard that length. He never had a haircut. And the women in this picture are presented as, well, what would you say about these women and their view of Diogenes' attempt to be a serious...
They're laughing at him.
Are they what? They're curious.
Diogenes looks grumpy.
He does. And what, you could put speech bubbles on their mouths, couldn't you? Like the one at the bottom saying... What's the one at the bottom saying? The pink lady at the bottom, what's she saying?
Are you okay?
She looks like the most...
Get out of here.
At the bottom,
she's
like, oh, are you okay?
I think he's marvellous for giving up all his...
Yeah, right.
The one looks nice. The blue one maybe is a photogeny of the smell.
Yeah.
And the other one looks like she's gossiping.
That's right. So here's a challenge for you. Here's a challenge for your blogs. You know, you can create your own blogs. Why not have this picture there and write the speech bubbles for these characters?
Good idea. Would that be creative or creative?
It's creative. Very creative.
So where was this painting?
It's on there.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could do that with any of the paintings, but this one's a particularly good candidate. They all seem to be saying something. You could almost hear the words coming out of their mouth. In fact, if you go here, you can actually hear them. Yep, I got it. I hear them. Did you hear it, Charles? Got it real close.
Can you hear them speak?
Yeah, they speak. Strain your ear. Yeah, got it.
He looks serious, too.
Serious?
He's like, I have forgotten everything. It's all gone. I have forgotten.
That's it. Very good. That's it.
It's got onions in.
Oh, he loves onions. He loves onions.
It's a real walk.
It's a real break.
Absolutely.
It's cold life. It's very...
There might even be garlic, you know.
Yeah.
It might be.
Yeah. You're not hating it.
Or is it straw?
I think it's straw. Cold nights. Yeah. Okay, come round this way, folks. We're moving to another room. Yes. Okay, here, this side. We're on page 11. These two paintings here, top and bottom. Spend hours on each painting, but these are two German paintings. The one at the top is a juggler. Is it more like Jane Austen or more like Charles Dickens in its appreciation of the juggler?
Oh, Charles Dickens.
Charles Dickens, you reckon? Yep.
Yeah.
They're two German paintings. You know, the one at the top was actually exhibited in that garden palace that was burnt down there in the Botanic Gardens. That's where it was first exhibited. And this is a very Germanic spring scene here with spring flowers.
Kids look very German as well.
They do. And if you turn 180 degrees and you're on the bottom of page 11, you've got this amazingly tragic painting called The Sons of Clovis over here. Guess what happened to them? Their mother cut the tendons in their feet so they couldn't walk and strapped them onto that barge and sent them down the river and hoped they'd die.
No way.
Yeah.
It's all written here, look. Page 11. And again, it's a sort of Victorian narrative painting. Bit extreme. So what the Victorians like to kind of titillate the already audiences with. So this is all Victorian stuff. In the era before television and before Hollywood. So don't tell me they didn't have their version of television. Have you seen this? Have you seen The Sons of Clovis in the gallery yet? You better go and see it. This is it. You're right in front of it, Charles. You can't escape it. You're stuck with it forever.
Is this based on a real story?
A real story. Okay, down this way, folks. Come here, Charles. Charles, come here first. Come on, Pamela. Come on, Pamela. You see what this painting is? It's that one. It's the artist painting that one.
It's
pretty cool, isn't it? The artist is painting that one. And this one is done in 1881. And you know what it's of? It's of 1781. This is on page 12, top of page 12. So why am I showing you this painting? I'm showing you this painting because we've had a fair bit about France, the French Revolution, and the way that the French Revolution had such an impact on politics and literature in the 19th century. So here's a painting that's done of the French Revolution era, but it's done 100 years later when the French were beginning to be proud of their own nationality again, and this painting by Edward Detal was commissioned by the French government to hang in the Parliament House in France.
Well, imagine presenting that thing.
I know.
Taking it.
I know.
Imagine being in that Parliament House with those old school...
That's right.
Outside New York.
Talking about New York, come closer, folks. This is time for a commercial.
Huddle in.
This is a commercial time. Pamela, come closer. Commercial is going to run for 7 seconds, then going to stop. How many of you are interested in coming to New York for a course on the literature and drama of New York in January?
Yeah.
You? Yep.
I'm going to New York with my family next year. So.
Oh, that's exciting.
Can't afford it actually.
That's being paid by Australian government?
For the spendings then.
$50 a day? You spend that on lunch now. Can't you save up $50 a day between now and January? Anyway, if you're interested, it's really important, valuable experience. It's worth thinking about, putting in an expression of interest, and there's still room.
Well, you can listen in if you want.
You're welcome.
More
often.
Oh, no, it's just...
They can have one. Here you go. I've got some stairs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I have some stairs. It takes you through the... Awesome, takes you through the 18th century into the 19th century and Australian art as well. Would you like one as well? I've got another spare. They can take it because I've got to carry it home with me. Through this way, folks.
Hello, are you the guys through Cambria?
No, I'm not. Sorry. No, I'm taking some students through a different way. Go and ask at the desk over there.
Okay.
You'll find them.
Okay, good.
All right.
So some of you did 20th century literature with me last semester. I know Brendan did. No, it's not boring. In fact, what happened in the 20th century, this is still 19th century, the two I wanted to point out here was this one by Rodin and Vincent van Gogh over there. What can you tell me about the face, this face here? No, that's not him. And this face here. What can you tell me about these faces?
This looks ancient, proud, like feeling.
About what's going on in the faces.
They look just woeful in some way. They've got this look. It doesn't look nice.
You know what? These people were on the verge of being executed, all six of them.
I'm glad I figured.
And Vincent van Gogh, his face was not being executed, but he did execute that face. That's a different meaning of the word execute. That means paint the face. But these artists, at the beginning of modernism, they turned away from just representing the world out there. They were trying to get inside, the feeling inside characters. And they were using all sorts of ways of emphasizing that inner intensity. That's what happened at the beginning of the 20th century, which some of you will be going on to with me next semester.
You will.
Maybe. Okay, now this is the end of the tour, but I'm going to quickly take Pamela around the Romantics. If you want to come with me again very quickly, we'll do a very quick bus stop tour. But if you don't, Pamela is going to... You two are a pair. But Pamela is going to turn this pear into a banana.
Okay.
So you have to... As soon as I've dealt with you in the romantic room, you're going to have to find these two and turn this pear into a banana. And what you have to do is find three or four paintings, one from each period, so you can write a blog on it, and so you can, in your exam, I'm going to put a question in there that enables you to bring your knowledge, your vast knowledge of Victorian 19th century art into the context of literature and think hard about a question that enables you to bring your artistic knowledge into literary understanding. You're all nodding very wisely, as if you know exactly what you're going to do. That's great. So, where are you two guys going to start?
Probably Enlightenment.
Enlightenment, okay. Well,
we've got to try and go in the order that we went in.
The order that we went. Okay, well, then you, Pamela, you will find these two easily.
Okay.
All right, and happy Easter.
Yeah, happy Easter.
Yeah, good.
Have a good weekend.
Yeah, yeah. I will. You too. You come with me. Front page, right at the front here.
Are you going to be offering 20th century literature
next semester?
I can't see it in the list of subjects.
Is it there? Hang on a second.
I haven't seen it.
Maybe it's not.
I've seen other things, but I haven't seen it.
I'm doing Australian, American.
Are you doing Australian literature next semester?
Yeah. I am.
I haven't done that one yet.
Okay, so in this room...
I'm trying to stick to the front.
In this room, there are
paintings
like this one that are about privilege class.
Yes.
Privilege, this is the Enlightenment, right? So privilege is here, look, privilege is there. Privilege is there. And that one there, this one particularly, top of page 2, William Blake. This is by Reynolds. William Blake said Reynolds is the death of art. Because he felt that art that dealt with privilege like that was just missing out on the whole nature of, vast nature of human existence, especially missing out on nature.
It's got the people dressed in their really sophisticated clothes and showing how fantastic they look, but it's really missing.
That's right. That's what Blake and the Romantics thought. So in this room also, because the Romanticism started in 1780, look what we've got here. This is the most important one here. This is number on page 2, the bottom one.
So where is it in page 2?
Bottom of page 2. Turn to bottom of page 2. That's it. This is by John Glover, done in 1824. And John Glover painted this of the Lake District, where Wordsworth and Coleridge did their work. And the dramatic difference between that and this, here is nature represented as some kind of beneficent force that brings harmony and that brings qualities of human balance and, you know, celebrating God's creation rather than man's imposition of.
And which era was this?
This is a Romantic era, 1820s. Romanticism from 1780 through to 1830. Yeah, that's right, exactly. So that's one Romantic painting in this room. There's another one over here. This one's done in 1781. This is a French painting, and what's distinguished here, it's got peasants in it, it's got the artist himself looking over a landscape so different from the kind of, you know, more stereotypical Enlightenment paintings.
Where's this painting?
This is over here. Top of page 3.
Oh, that's the people.
That's it, yeah.
So it shows the peasants at harmony with their surroundings.
That's right, that's right.
And that was during the Romantic
period. It's the Romantic period, yep. At the end here, look, down here, yeah. A savage contrast to this one, for example. This one is John Hoppner. This one here, John Hoppner there. Mademoiselle Hillisburg, 1791. She was a dancer. And we talked about this painting as being so much freer in its expression, in its sense of freedom, and in its colour. She's much more natural, earthy.
She's a bit like Dickens' idea, isn't she? Yeah. She's a dancer.
She's a dancer, yeah, something like that.
Like, but it's
Romanticism. Now, what we did is I explained to them that one of the greatest resources that this gallery has got is Romanticism that occurred in Australia, because all the early Australian paintings were done in the Romantic era. And what's really fascinating is this artist here called John Glover, he migrated to Australia.
Is he like John Constable?
Yeah, he's a bit like John Constable. And he migrated to Australia. Let's have a look at some of his Australian paintings. And you're going to come back and join these in a moment. So there is John Glover. Look, he's in Tasmania, and he presents nature as a beneficent place, not a wilderness, a place where you can be reflective. And there's a picture of him and his wife and the artist sitting in the right corner, very small. Nature.
Which page is that?
This is on the bottom of page 3.
By the time I managed to see this stuff, it's so...
Launceston and the river.
Oh, that is that one.
That's one there. And there's the artist and his wife sitting there reflecting on the powers and beauties of nature, and there's a little dog in front of them. You can just see it.
So that was... This is the Australian artist from...
Yeah, that's right.
And it was the Romantic era,
yeah. It was done in 1832, so just after the end of the Romantic period.
So these people, I noticed they tend to do the same thing. It's like they've always got a child or someone, yep, sitting there near a creek or something.
That's right. They give,
like, yeah. What's his name again? John Constable.
Yeah, they did that.
Same idea.
Creating a sense of the power and vastness of nature compared to the smallness of human beings.
Right.
He also did this one, look.
Yeah.
And this is, you remember me telling you about the noble savage, the idea of primitive peoples in the Romantic period. Rousseau talking about the noble savage.
What page is that on?
That's here, bottom of page 3. John Glover, Natives on the Ouse River. At the bottom of this page here, there it is there. Image is over the page. And he's representing native peoples living in harmony with nature.
And that was, that was like that picture in the lecture.
Yeah.
It's got a picture of the Aboriginal
family. That's right.
Family.
That's right.
Yeah, and it's like them around the, yep. the Aboriginal yep. people around
that's
the
right.
place. And then it's very interesting. It's like there's...
Great touch, great touch.
No, it's a good place.
Yeah, capturing like a possum
capturing
or something.
Capturing their dinner, I suppose.
That's right, that's right. So in this room also, and there's Charles and Asherina over here, there are several other paintings here, and they're on this page here, look, 1, 2, 3, of other paintings that are the romantic landscape. People are in awe of the power of nature, and the nature has shrunk, the human beings have shrunk almost to nothing there. So why don't you go and join those two over there now and join in their conversation? Because I've covered what you missed.
No, it's
all right.
All right?
Good. Okay, good. So Charles, Asherina, the middle of the banana has arrived.
Thanks.
Okay,
and
go for
I'll
it.
And I'll drop you those stupid stuff I got yesterday.
Good.
So I'll send you email an email.
It. Yeah, that's good.
I'm going to tell if this works out, Jim.
Yeah.
It's just skip my mind.
It's
so
fine.
I've got it at home. Go and get it scanned today.
Excellent. Okay. Goodo, enjoy the rest of your time.
Thanks, Michael.
Good, okay, see you.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.